save my soul, 'cause I'm a sinner to my core. I ask forgiveness and nothing more. Darkness surrounds me and I can't see all of the demons right here.
Welcome to the situation report for, what are we at? July 8th. Wow. Where did the month go? Sure, I got a new camera, so I'm trying to get it sorted. That's all kinds of fun. See if I can get this thing adjusted here. Adjust it out this way. Interesting weekend. So France, I figured that France would be the last on the list to go nuclear. And it looks like they're going to be the first on the list, which is actually kind of funny when you think about it. So what's interesting, though, is I thought Ireland would be first. In fact, when the group of us were talking about it, we all thought that it was going to go nuclear first, and then France, and then the UK, and then... Germany at some point, but Germany is actually in the process of going after all of their political dissidents. So yeah, bear with me on the camera. I got this new camera today and I'm trying to figure it out. It's been fun trying to get the damn thing working. So, lots of stuff going on with regard to, the narratives, So over the weekend, I don't know if any of you are on Twitter. If you're watching Twitter, you watched the Patriot Front being front and center. And they showed up in like 250 posts on Saturday morning. And then there was another 100 posts yesterday. What that says to me is they're building the narrative for domestic terrorist attack. Look, nobody buys it. Only the lemmings that are watching Main Street are really the ones that are paying attention to it. I look at it and go, Fed boys, first of all, the mainstream media doesn't dig into any part of the Patriot Front. They don't even dig into their backgrounds, which is funny because it's like, come on, these guys are all wearing masks. They're all wearing the same, 5/11 tactical gear with their bullshit boots and their US flags and their blue shirts. Just God. I mean, it's the whoever the B team is that thought of these guys is a moron. I mean, they're helping our cause, right? And rule number one is you never step in the middle and disrupt your enemy while they're destroying themselves. And they're destroying themselves from a narrative perspective every single day. And I think it's almost comical that these guys are still being paraded out. Now there's a new one, the Blacks of Israel. That was the new one that came out Sunday. So they're building for the clash and they're building for the false flag. That's what it's all about, is false flag, right? They need some kind of a catalyst event. But if you listen to the roundtable last week, and we didn't do one Friday because it's holiday weekend, everybody's on vacation, humma humma, right? So everybody's got stuff going on. The thing that I think is interesting that bears mentioning is that even in Europe, you're seeing the rank and file average citizen fed up. They're not going to play the game anymore. They're not buying into the narratives. They're not buying into trying to maintain the status quo or the hegemony. All those narratives have just vanished, especially in the last few months. That's because if you go back to when Trump came to office, the one thing that Trump did that I thought was brilliant, that nobody else has done since he came to office, is he pronounced the mainstream media dead. And that was probably one of the best things he could have done for himself as well as for the country. Because when you pronounce the mainstream media dead, you in effect, from an information perspective, you're in effect saying, look, this institution no longer provides value. They're no longer a source of truth, and they're no longer trustworthy. And then when he followed it with fake news, that really set the wheels in motion for the cultural narrative to vanish. And they've always relied on mainstream TV, Hollywood, as well as legacy social media to push their narratives. And they've been highly successful at it. I mean, look at how many people after 9/11 didn't even question the fact that Building 7 came down and it wasn't even hit. Nobody even asked the question, because everybody was wrapped up in the fact the planes hit the tower, right? It's that shocking event, that flashbulb moment that gets everybody's attention. And then they fill it in with narrative. And they had, I mean, think about it. If you were alive on 9/11, think about where you were. You probably know exactly where you were on 9/11. You knew exactly what you were doing. You knew exactly how you heard it for the first time. In fact, you knew exactly your entire 10 minutes around that moment. It's burned in your, etched in your memory, and it will never go away. And a lot of people could say the same thing about Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor is the same kind of an event. And when you add all these things up, you see how effective the narratives were all the way up until 2017, 2018, when Trump took office. After that, narratives vanished. And it's because people started questioning the mainstream media. They started questioning what they were hearing. And now they can't post anything without somebody or a flurry of memes, a flurry of, let's just say a flurry of responses that completely outs their whole agenda. And it's because there's a good portion of the population that's wide awake. Now, what we're facing now that we haven't faced before is the bots and the AI. And the AI is unbelievable right now. The amount of AI that is being pushed on Twitter. It's being pushed on Telegram, every legacy media, plus all the new medias, with the exception of, I'd say, Gab and Minds, doesn't have the same level of engagement, but doesn't have the same level of bots. And why all of this is important right now, and why I'm going down this rabbit hole today, it's very simple. When you're doing influencing operations and you're trying to sell something to the public, you need to build the story over time. And then once you build the story over time, you slowly change the narrative to what you want people to buy into. And you slowly fill in the gaps so there's just enough true information for people to buy into it, but not enough for it to be completely true and for you to be held accountable for it. If you go back to Goebbels and what Goebbels did, Goebbels was a master of propaganda. He would put out these generic messages prior to the elections in Germany. They said nothing, committed to nothing, talked about no issues directly, and just said Germany's going to be better under Hitler. And people bought into it because they were so sick of the status quo. And that's what they're trying to do right now. They just had an election in the UK. They just had an election in France. And it's the word on the street is already out that it's a rigged deal. These two individuals that are taking over were literally installed. There's no hope for the public buying into it. And if you look at what I was saying last week, SITREP, as well as during the roundtable, you'll see that they've set conditions so that nobody buys the narrative, nobody will accept the election, and nobody will accept what is being pressed by the mainstream media. And that's by design, because they want you to be confused. They want to flood the entire system with garbage information, and then people will buy into whatever is pushed on the fringes. And why it's important is that as things start to decay more and more and more, as the violence starts to progress more and more and more, they're going to play the fear card more and more and more. And that fear card will lead people to accept whatever system they put in front of them just so they can stop the pain, just so they can stop the violence. And you're already seeing the uptick of this rhetoric. Today in Como News, they did this big article about a shooting of some guy in South Seattle, and his family's wondering when the violence is going to be curtailed and what the state and the city are going to do about the violence. At the same time that was released, there was an article released about ammunition vending machines in stores in Oklahoma and Tennessee. And you should have seen the liberal responses. Half of them were bots and AI having a conversation about, yes, we're scared. We hope the government steps in and takes control. That's all AI. But it's the telling conversation from those dependent on the system that will tell you how many are going to sign up for the new system. So they're building this narrative that gun violence is the worst thing in the world. It started last week with yet another Indian, the Surgeon General, coming out saying that guns are an existential crisis. They're a threat to democracy. They're a threat to our way of life. Okay, why does the Surgeon General care about guns? It's not even in his domain of expertise. In fact, the first thing you want to say is stop talking. You're not educated on this. Stop talking. But when you take a step back from it and you look at what he's trying to do, he's setting the conditions, setting the narrative, so that the next conversation that comes out of the administration is all about gun violence. It's all about legislating firearms, legislating ownership. And if you look at Massachusetts, Washington State, California, Oregon, you will see states that have completely decimated 2A laws. And all of this is not coincidental. So back when Christine Gregoire, most of you won't remember her because she's from Washington State, when she was put into office, she was installed into office. And when she was installed in office, the margin of votes was so close that there was almost a runoff called, and they should have called it, because the same guy that architected the voting system in Washington, the same guy that architected the current system that's up there with mail-in ballots and drop boxes and all that nonsense, he's down in LA now. He's decimating what's left of that system. And you can see how well the results have landed across California since the liberals have taken over. This was a controlled effort to not just put the right judges in place, the right down ballot in place for the House and Senate in each state, the governor's office, the attorney general's office, the secretary of state's office in all these states. And they did it for one very specific reason. So they could, one, amend the constitutions to give the governors more rights and more ability, authoritarian ability to dictate how the states operate. And then number two, to give them complete control so that no conservatives could ever come back to power. And that's played out extremely well for them in Washington State. And you would be surprised how many people have bought into that. The only reason they bought into it, though, is the influencing operations that have been going on since 2000. Literally since 2000, the entire state apparatus has been focused on telling the public and getting the public to believe that their voting system was not only flawless, but it was highly, highly observed. There was no way that anybody could step in and cheat, even though the whole system is designed to cheat, just like the voting machines. I mean, Smartmatic, wow, gaping hole. The point is, they've set conditions so they could do make all of these changes and get people to buy into it over the last 20 years. Nothing we're seeing right now is brand new. None of this is the result of a government or a group of people that are acting in their own self-interest. This was a plan. These plans have been in place for a very, very long time. And the messaging that we're seeing now is the final stages before they unleash the violence. And if you read the book, Pawns in the Game, this will literally, it will outline everything I'm talking about. And it's classic communism. The more violence, the better. The more chaos, the better. Because the more people are in fear, the more people accept whatever's in front of them and they accept the fear that's being peddled to them, the more they're going to sign up for whatever system they put in front of them. And this isn't being run by a government. This is being run by oligarchs. They said the quiet part out loud last week when Rahm Emanuel's brother, he's another oligarch, was talking about how they need to remove Biden. The institutional donors, remember I've talked about institutional money. That's the deep, deep, deep money pockets that have been around for hundreds of years. Every single one of those donors / controllers wants their own agenda fulfilled by whoever's in office. And when they come out and say the quiet part out loud, it means they have no fear of reprisal. They have no fear of prosecution. They have no fear of the public. For them to be so open about the fact that they're literally telling the entire institution of the Democratic Party what they're going to do with the President of the United States. This is the President of the United States. This is not some Secretary of State. This is the President. The institutional donors are speaking out loud about what they're going to do about the President. That's a very significant change in the way that our political system works, but it's also a significant change in the way the oligarchs and the apparatus view us as citizens. And that should show all of you that they don't care about the narrative anymore. They could care less. They're going to still continue to try and build this narrative about domestic terrorism, but they're going to do whatever they want to do. And the question that all of you have to ask is just one question, just one. And it's simply this: at what point, at what instant do you realize that going along with the new system is more painful than breaking the law? Because that is going to be the decisive moment. That's going to be the moment where you decide, I'm not going to play anymore. And you become ungovernable. Because we are rapidly approaching that culmination point. And we're going to see it play out in Europe first. I've said that before. I'll say it again. We're going to see this play out in Europe before we ever see it here. And when we do, I guarantee you, you will see something new. And, you know, everybody's going to hate when I say this, but it's true. I've been saying this all along. I'm not going to change my story now. We're not going to make it to the 24 election. If we do, it's because they want social disorder on the other side of that. Remember, the people that we're fighting against, and I read an article about 5 years ago, and I didn't believe it when I read it, because it basically said these two individuals from DARPA are the ones that are behind all of the propaganda, they're behind all of the planning, they're behind all of the agendas, and they have 4 to 5 or 6 lines of operation that they're planning for, and they've used AI to war game out all these different lines of operation. So even if you think you're ahead of them, they have 2 or 3 other lines of operation in the background that you probably won't even see coming that they've already planned for and war gamed out. And when they unleashed this and they were talking about the pandemic, which again, I didn't believe when I read it, because it's like 2018, I didn't believe that it was going to happen. And then it happened. And I'm like, everything this, and I wish I could find it, because everything this was outlined about these two individuals basically said the AI is more sophisticated than we think. They are going to use AI for this pandemic, which is what they did. And then they're going to use AI to war game out how the public's going to respond when they unleash this communistic terror. And if you go back to the Russian Revolution, you will see the exact same script being played out throughout the Russian, you know, prior to the Russian Revolution. And it was increase and uptick the violence, prosecute innocent people, prosecute law-abiding citizens, uptick the sedition, uptick the violence and the incitement of violence, and then finally it tips over, and then they step in and say, this is the new government. And then we get somebody like Stalin, and I would submit to you that Gavin Newsom is Stalin in our modern era, or Hillary Clinton. Both are equally awful. Both are going, you'd probably be on the same ticket. We'll probably see them replace Biden before the 19th, or at least right around, if not at the convention. And when they do, the entire U.S. is going to freak out, and you'll start to see an uptick in violence from that. They're banking on the fact that people aren't going to accept the results of the election. All of the window dressing around it, the conventions, the talk about vice presidents, the talk about replacement, that's all window dressing to set conditions so people resort to violence when they don't see the election go in a fair and equitable manner. They already know that. They've already war gamed it out. The question you have to ask is, what is it going to take for you to step over that line? Because once you do, you're stepping over that line and you're saying to yourself, okay, this can't be resolved through peaceful means. I probably, or most likely, I could die doing this, but it's more important to get the country back for my kids and for my family than to watch what's happening and to let it continue. And there will be a whole swath of the population that will go along with whatever they're told. I mean, look at all the morons wearing masks right now. There's a host of morons running around today. You can't make this stuff up. I was taking my truck through the car wash. Guy behind me in his car by himself, 11 o'clock in the morning, wearing a mask. Saving the world one breath at a time. And you got to ask yourself, why? Why would somebody wear a mask right now when they're openly saying masks don't help you? That's the power of influencing operations. There's going to be 1 in 3 that sign up for whatever system they put in front of them. And like I said, we're going to watch this play out in France first. Then we're going to watch it play out in the UK. Then we're going to watch it play out the rest of Europe. But they're like one keystroke away from total chaos, because they are incensed with the fact that most of the country voted for Le Pen and just a small area of Paris. And that should sound vaguely familiar to all the swing states, to all the key centers and the key counties in the swing states, all voting for the candidates they wanted, and them having the ability through the biggest district / county selecting the key players for that state. That's how they did it here. That's how they're doing it. You're seeing the same playbook being played over and over and over again. And you would think that people would wake up to it, but they're not. I literally have seen article after article after article of people saying this was the most, we had the most free and fair elections ever. Which is nonsense, because we don't. Not only does the social and the cultural narratives don't support that, the proof doesn't support that. But you have people that are so dependent on the system, they're fighting to preserve it. And if you go back to the Matrix, when Morpheus and Neo were sitting there with the blue pill and the red pill, and he said, there are people so dependent on the system, they will fight to preserve it. That's what you're watching. That's the 1/3 that will go along with whatever. They're going to be whistling while they're walking into the gas chamber. And trust me, a lot of people are going to, they're not going to make it through this. That's just the way this is going to go. But the point is, they're trying to guide the public towards a false flag, and they're going to try and use that false flag to widen the war, and it's not going to work out for them because the narratives don't support it, the public opinion doesn't support it, and the public view of the government and trust in the media does not support it. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how this goes and what the next steps are. But I don't think for one second this is desperation. I think that this is a planned event. They want as much confusion. They want to look as desperate as possible because it helps their credibility and it helps their narrative. Because if you think, and this is one thing that I do not do anymore, I never underestimate my enemy. I never underestimate my enemy's ability to conduct operations against us. And I'll use a very simple, a simple example of this. So I was sent to DC in 2008 to deal with what's called a brush fire. That's where you have thousands of laptops and desktops that are infected with malware. There was 250,000, there were what's called endpoints that were affected by malware. And this piece of malware was so expertly architected that what it did is it would sit dormant in a network for 24 to 48 hours. And the clocks varied on every different laptop that it infected. And when it would go from dormant to active, it would scan the network around it. So first it would scan the machine that was on, then it would scan the network around it, then it would hit the endpoints, which are like firewalls and routers and switches, and it would scan those and figure out the routing tables, and then it would scan the routing tables, and then it would build a PDF file and then send it off. So they basically, whoever architected that on the other end, had a complete picture of the network that they had infected. And it was fire and forget. They didn't have to do anything. And then it would stop phoning home. So you couldn't figure out where it went after the first transmission. Very, very sophisticated. And every time that we would go reimage a machine, if we didn't bring the whole network segment down and reimage all the machines in that segment, if one machine was left on, it would reinfect everything within 5 minutes. They had thought through how we were going to respond. They thought through how we were going to do remediation. They thought through how often we do remediation, how often we change operating systems and do upgrades. They had all of the options laid out. So if we restore to original media, meaning take it back to the original operating system and reload the machine and blow away all the data, they would just reinfect it. If we tried to clean it up and get rid of it, it would sit dormant and then it would reinfect the machine. And it was highly sophisticated. They used swap space. They used some of the recovery space on the disk because all the disks at that time were being shipped with recovery space. They were using recovery space. It just very sophisticated. And we can't for 1 minute assume that the enemy we're facing has not thought through all of these options and they haven't wargamed all this out. In fact, the proof in the pudding is the fact that the Joint Chiefs of Staff came out this week and said that they're not worried about Trump winning. That tells me that the military is fully on board with whatever the regime is doing, and they are not going to allow Trump to come back under any circumstances. And most importantly, they have an ace in the hole. Think about that for a second. They have an ace in the hole. You have to ask what that is. And you have to assume that they're 2 to 3 steps ahead of us. They're at least 2 years ahead of us in planning. They're at least 2 years ahead of us in execution. So we're always playing catch up. And now when you throw in the aspect of drones and drone capability and the things that we've seen just in the Ukraine war, that should make you really take pause for the level of sophistication that we're dealing with. And on top of that, during COVID, they built out the entire system of censorship across the planet, especially in Europe. So they could censor and turn off anybody that they want to. That hasn't happened yet, but it's coming. And when it does come, it's going to catch a lot of people by surprise. And, you know, my friends and family give me a lot of shit for the things I post on social media. But I do that for a very, very specific reason. I want to hit the guardrails every day and figure out where the censorship is. I want to figure out what keywords I have to use that's going to change my algorithm to what I see in my feed every day. I want to see what it's going to take for me to get blocked, for me to get banned, for me to get censored. Unless we hit those boundaries, unless we figure out what keywords are using, we'll never defeat it. We'll never be able to overcome it. And it's going to be a constant process of playing catch up, which we're already doing. We need to get ahead of the game. We need to anticipate the fact that the things were, and look, everything I see, everything I hear, everything I read, all of the different news articles out there, I take all of them with a grain of salt, assume they're all BS, and then I work my way backwards towards the truth, especially in those articles that I think are very, very important, not only to the cultural side of this, but to the social side of this. Because look, he who controls the cultural and social media are the ones that are going to win. It's not going to be the folks that have the most kinetic, the most beans, bullets, and gas. You should see that's exactly what's happening, especially in the first few months of the war in Gaza. The Israelis completely lost the social narrative. Day three, like done, never getting it back. And you could say it was on purpose. You could say that it was a matter of bad press. I would have to say it was a very, very, very well-planned event that they were never going to win the information side of that. I don't think they care if they win it or not. But what's come out of that? What's come out of that is you had a lot of people across the planet have done deep dives into the relationship between dual citizen Israelis and Americans and their roles in Congress and their affiliation with Mossad, as well as with the Israeli government. And that's very significant because prior to 2023, you would have never, ever heard anything related to the relationship between our politicians, especially dual citizens, and the Israeli government. All of that has come out because of the fact that the conservative side of the house owns the cultural narrative right now. As much as you would like to say that the left does, they don't. The pendulum swung when Trump came down the escalator and started talking about fake news. That's when the pendulum swung, but it really shifted after 2021. When Biden took office, it was literally a complete 180 by the public and public opinion against the current regime and the status quo. And they're never getting it back. I don't care what they do. Unless, you know, even if they play the alien card, there's too many people that are awake to that. So there's probably six different avenues of approach they can go, but they're all going to fail because they don't own that narrative. And they've literally spent their entire 4 years that they should have been coalescing and solidifying control, literally trying to dig out from one bad news story after another. And the fact that people know Obama is running the show in the White House, the fact that they know that Obama is even being considered for the ticket is significant, because 5-6 years ago when Obama was in office, we would have never heard about it because they had complete control of the narrative. Go back to when he came into office. When you go back to when he came into office, all of the narratives he used, I mean, literally, they took everything that Goebbels had prepackaged and used in the German elections to bring Hitler to power and did the same thing to build a grassroots movement across the U.S. with slogans that meant absolutely nothing. And it was literally the same nonsense, these ambiguous campaign messages, these ambiguous promises. Go watch his debates. His debates is just literally, it was a string of words that were nonsense that meant nothing. And prior to Obama, when McCain and Obama were running, and even before that, in 2000, when it was Bush and it was what was the guy's name, the environmental guy, Gore. If you listen to their debates, it was all about statistics. They would like rogue memorize all these statistics, and they would come out and hit their talking points with all these statistical, you know, nuances and all this information that supposedly made sense. And all that went away in 2008. it was all these generic slogans about how we're going to make the world better and how we're going to talk to our enemies and how we're going to bring the communities together, blah, blah, blah. And what did Obama do? He did everything that he said. He did opposite of everything that he said he would do. Even in his most direct answers, he went against all of those things. But it was all generic stuff anyway, so he could do whatever. And there's a lot of people that don't even think he took his oath. So what you're watching is a complete, it's a construct of what they want you to believe is really going on. I don't consider anything going on right now to be real. Not even the discussion about removing Biden. I think that was a foregone conclusion when he took office in 21. Because look, the guy was Mr. Potato Head back in 2019. He couldn't carry us. Literally couldn't finish a sentence back then. And people are saying, oh, he's gone downhill. I think he's already dead. I think he's on ice and they're just putting some Muppet up there to do the word soup. I mean, there's nothing outside the realm of possible when you're dealing with this situation in the regime. And the fact that they did his inauguration and no one could get near it, not even the press. And then all of these Hollywood actors and stars showed up and they all looked like they had been threatened with death. I mean, these people, go look at the videos and the pictures of all these people around Biden's inauguration. Literally no one wanted to be there. It's a construct. All of it's a construct. And the reason why I'm bringing all of this into one clear picture is so you realize that when the violence kicks off and things start to go sideways, especially in the bigger cities, that all of this is a planned event. They want to maximize the fear, maximize the violence, maximize the damage to the cities. And that way, at some point, people will just say, enough, I'll sign up for whatever. That's what's coming. That's what all these narratives, this Patriot Front, these Blacks of Israel, and all this other nonsense that you're seeing, that's what it's all about. It's not about anything else. It's about setting the stage, doing the influence operations, and setting conditions so that when it all kicks off, the only thing the American people is going to want is for it to stop. And you mark my words, they will have a ready-made security force or security detail that's ready to step in. I guarantee it. That's what's coming, folks. That's what I'm seeing right now. They're building towards this narrative. And if I was a betting man, I still say that Carter has something to do with this. Because every president that's died, and go look at McCain's funeral. What a procession that was. And then there was the letters. Everybody got a letter. What would the letter say? I don't know, but everybody looked unhappy when they saw the letter. What a perfect moment to eliminate every bit of your opposition, every liability, every non-producer, every person that's in the cabinet that you don't like. What a perfect opportunity. You bring them all together and you eliminate the ones that you don't want. And guess what? That's what Stalin did. Why would we consider this regime to be any different? The players to be any different? These people want to hold on to power. They want to consolidate power. And they want to turn this country into communist China. And it should tell you that they think they're going to do it when you see all of these Chinese NGOs in cities all across this country, out in the open, celebrating communist China. Chinese operatives in our country celebrating communist China on national TV. That should tell you that they feel like they're protected and they're going to be successful. What they're not counting on is for the public to unite, which is why I keep saying that if we don't unite, unity is going to be the hill we die on. Because we have to unite and thrive in order to throw off the shackles of tyranny. There is no other mechanism now to do it. And I had conversation after conversation over the weekend about the military is going to step in. No, they're not. Every general officer, all the way down to lieutenant colonel that's still in the military, every one of them is, in my mind, is loyal to the new system. They're already a part of it. They're already talking about it. I mean, Milley talked about it in his congressional hearings. I've read Marx. I've read DEI. I want to understand what that means. And what did they celebrate this week? The Navy had this big story about some amphibious assault ship doing a gay pride celebration. Nobody cares. No one cares. No one cares about your sexuality. Nobody cares which hole you like to plug. Nobody cares. No one. And nobody cares if you can't pick a hole. But the fact that we're celebrating that is a direct affront to the family. And that's by design. They want to replace the family, but more importantly, they want to replace women with this transhumanist agenda. All of it's on display. That to me says that these people believe that they're going to be successful, or they're failing badly and they're doubling down. And if I use the Wendy Rogers model of what she's doing right now, I would say that she's doubling down because she knows she's in trouble. But she also knows that Carrie Lake and Trump are not going to, they're not going to out her, and they're not going to pull their endorsement. And the proof's in the pudding, because everybody that's in the GOP establishment around Trump is all worried about keeping cohesion and keeping the party together, especially now that Laura Trump is in the GOP. And you can't count on Carrie Lake to say, you know what, Wendy, you need to step down. That would be the right thing to do. But they're not going to do that because they don't want to break up the party. And my answer to that is Wendy Rogers should be prosecuted, number one, for dereliction of duty. Number two, lying to the public. And number three, and most importantly, she's doubled down. And now she's trying to tell people that this is just a ploy. Literally, Carrie Lake is not in office because of Wendy Rogers' inaction and because of her grandstanding. That alone should say to Carrie Lake, you need to pull your endorsement and tell her to pound sand. But is it happening? No. Just like this Steve Slayton guy has doubled down and said, well, the National Archives were my DD-214. If you don't know what a DD-214 is, it's when you leave the service, you get a document that lists all of your awards. It lists all of your combat operations. It lists everything you've done in the military. And it's a very succinct document that says you served here at these dates, you got these awards, et cetera, et cetera. And when you're done, the Army moves your stuff over to the National Archives. So you can your family can query it if for whatever reason you're estranged from your family, but more importantly, so there's a historical record of every soldier that served. So if it came out of the National Archive, that's what the Army submitted to the National Archives, not Slayton. And what possible reason would the National Archives have to publish a false DD-214? That's the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my life. But that's the kind of BS that's coming out of Rogers' mouth. I mean, stolen valor is a big thing. I've talked about that three times now. You're basically denigrating everybody that died in combat and all those people that served before you because you're lying about what you did. And look, everybody's combat experience is different. And I feel like, you know, I was on the ground. I did my thing. But what I saw was a microcosm from some of the infantry units and some of the striker units that were in Mosul. Those guys were in combat every single day. They were in contact with the enemy almost every single day. And I look at General Hamm. Carter Hamm, should have come out of there with a Silver Star. The guy was outside the wire every single day meeting with the Iraqis. Every single day. And he didn't flinch. He's like, that's what we got to do. We got to go get the Iraqis motivated to lead and govern. And we got to go get the, we got to get the fuel. We got to get fuel rolling. We got to get food rolling. We got to get the election set up. I mean, he didn't even flinch. And the fact that Steve Slayton is saying that he was in Vietnam when there's no way he could have been in Vietnam, that's an affront to everybody that served. and everybody should be calling him out to resign. But the Republican Party, this shows you their response to this, and the fact that nobody's called out Wendy Rogers from the Republican Party tells you that they don't represent their entire base, because the base should be incensed right now at this. I mean, it's one thing to claim that you didn't do something. It's another thing to double down on it and then ban the GOP from Navajo County, the county you represent, and then say, I don't owe you an explanation. That right there should have got her thrown out of office. But again, this goes to show that not only is she corrupt, but Ben Thoma, who's running the party or running the House, is just as corrupt. Because inside the legislature in Arizona, they should be calling for her resignation. And they should be calling for Slayton to step down. But what are you seeing? Everybody's doubling down on Seth Geshel. I know Seth Geshel personally. I know him. And I'm telling you, he and Jack Don, I know both of them. They don't publish anything. They don't say anything unless they have the goods to back it up. And the fact that Wendy Rogers is still doubling down, that shows you how corrupt the entire system is. And then, as they were doing the investigation into her, they figured out that she's gotten over $2 million of campaign finance funding from her nephew, who runs a lobbyist firm down in Florida. That's not a conflict of interest? Crickets from the GOP in Arizona. Crickets from all of her peers. Crickets from everybody in the federal or in the national GOP. What does that tell you? They don't care what we think. They don't care what you think. They don't care if you know that they're corrupt. They're going to do it anyway. So as far as I'm concerned, until Carrie Lake denounces Wendy Rogers and Steve Slayton, I don't care about the, and I know you're listening, Carrie. So I want you to hear me very, very clearly. I don't care about the party. I don't care about Trump. I don't care about your run for the Senate, because you're never getting in. I don't care what hat trick you think you have. If you would have listened to me on November 8th of 2022, you would have had a fighting chance to take this to court and actually win. But you didn't listen then, and you're not listening now. So listen to me now. If you don't call out Wendy Rogers, if you don't pull your endorsement from her, I will make sure that every broadcast between now and the election, I call you out. And I call you out for exactly what you are. You're a fraud. And if you're not going to call out somebody who is actually guilty of stolen valor, then you're just as bad. And shame on you. Because a lot of us, including Seth Geshel, worked very, very hard to try and get you into office. And what did you do? How do you repay his loyalty? You tell him that you don't want the party to break up. This is too bad for the party. It'll break up the party. I don't care about the GOP. The McCain clan destroyed the GOP in Arizona. There is no recovering from that. As long as Cindy McCain is here, there is no recovery for the GOP. Period. End of story. And whatever you think you have in the hole is not going to happen. I don't care how many different ways you try and tell the world that you're going to win. You're not going to win. They control the counting centers. You can tell Trump I said that. They control the counting centers. You can't outvote them. You can't outballot them. They will do exactly what they did last time. They will close the MTEC doors, and they will wait and wait you out and come up with just enough to where it was just so close and you didn't win. I guarantee you that's what they're going to do. And unless the American public bands together and goes down to that MTEC armed and pushes the sheriff's office out and actually observes the count, there's no way you're ever going to get a fair count. And the Americans don't have the balls to do it. So good luck with that. Let me know how it works out for you. You're supporting somebody who is a patented liar and an opportunist. And you have done nothing, nothing since 2020 to out Rogers. I called her out in 2020 when she was going around the country on Steve Bannon's show talking about election reform and then wouldn't answer a direct question from her constituents about what she was going to do. I called her out then. And what did you do? You allowed her to continue. That represents everything that's wrong with the GOP across this country, right there. You disregard the entire base that you're supposed to support, and you go support somebody like Trump, who's clearly a controlled asset of Israel. I mean, he's still talking about Gaza and how it's the Palestinians' fault. Come on. And maybe he softened the rhetoric. But when you were supposed to be here fighting your case, Arizona was watching you run off to Mar-a-Lago to do dinners. And it was very, very clear about 3 weeks in that you had no intention of winning those cases. And what happened? You didn't win your cases. Why? Because you were too busy in Mar-a-Lago and everybody was watching it. That, in and of itself, is exactly why you're not going to win this election. And the fact that you're not going to call out Wendy Rogers for what she is, a shameless opportunist and a traitor, makes you just as bad. Because I equate treason with somebody who is literally playing themselves out to be a combat veteran when they're not. And I can list four names right now of people that I cared about deeply that died overseas. Gary Moore, Mark Phelan, Jerome Potter, and belatedly, Tommy Topinka. All of them died serving this country. And you're out there telling people that Steve Slayton is something that he's not. Shame on you. And if it were up to me, trust me, I would escort you to Gitmo, and you would have a sudden and probably catastrophic accident outside of a helicopter. I'm telling you, man. It's unbelievable that you have been allowed to stay in office. Unbelievable. The point is, all of this, the narratives that you're seeing right now are a construct. And I think that everything we're about to see in the next 3 to 5 weeks is going to be a scripted event, garnered to get public opinion to sway in one direction or the other, or worse, to get every group to turn on each other. I didn't understand what Obama was doing when he was bringing in all the Somalis and putting them in these very, very small communities. I didn't understand what he was doing. Now I understand what he's doing. He was building small pockets of resistance in every conservative area. And he started in West Virginia and he moved around the country and he built 2,000-3,000 unit apartment complex, which is what they're doing right now. They built, you know, housing developments with 175,000 homes down in Texas, and it's all illegals living in them. They've given them low interest loans. They're giving them monthly stipends. They're giving them benefits and health care. And what are we doing? I see people that right now are on public assistance that are making less than $1,000 a month. I see people that are on Social Security that maybe make $1,500-$1,600 bucks a month. And we're paying these people that are illegals $2,000 or $3,000 a month, and we're putting them into this isolated communities where they're all keep their own culture, they keep their own language. Because if you look at what the Somalis have done just in Minnesota, as well as because they're in Washington too. And when they came to Washington, you know what they were doing? They would get a white girl pregnant. They would have her get on public assistance and they would be flat on their ass doing nothing. And they would be in their small communities, speaking their own language with their own culture, and they would keep everybody out. And pretty soon it would be an isolated area and even the police wouldn't go in there. Does that sound familiar to France, to Britain, to Ireland, to Germany? It's exactly what they're doing. And if you go back to the Amazon diversity model, instead of bringing in unions, they just brought in more diversity And what happens when you put all these different diverse groups together? They break off in their individual groups. That's what they're doing to us on a planetary scale. So one of two things is going to happen when these narratives collide and all these lines of operation intersect. It's either going to be A, civil war, or B, all these groups will band together, or conglomeration of that, or C, it will just be chaos. I don't know which way it's going to go, to be perfectly honest with you. But the fact that you're seeing the political class right now that doesn't represent the people and doesn't care, you're seeing all of our institutions that have been weaponized against us, I would say it's going to be the latter. It's going to be chaos. Which is why I'm more interested in giving people the ability to look at the narratives and say, this is noise. This is signal. This is noise. Because the signal in all of this is what's going to keep people organized and away from the drama. Because remember, the whole intent of all of these narratives, the whole intent of all of these different sound bites and video clips is to generate an emotional response from a large group of people. They want to recreate the Floyd riots again. And they want to let those cascade out of control. If you stay away from the emotional side of whatever you're seeing, and look, it's very, very hard. I see stuff on Twitter that's generated by AI that makes my blood boil. And it's not because of the message. It's the fact that there's so much AI across Twitter and Telegram. And I'm not on Facebook, so I couldn't tell you what Facebook looks like. But even YouTube now has got AI-generated videos. And you have to stay away from that, because if you don't, it's going to suck you in the emotional side of it. And the emotional side of it will drive you to do something that they want you to do. And if they can generate an emotional response from you, trust me when I say this, they win. If you stay back and you're the calmest person in the room while everything else is going crazy, I guarantee you they won't win, because you'll be the person to redirect everybody at that one moment and say, look, why are you guys fighting each other? None of us have control of this. None of us can participate in this. All of this is happening at the national level, and look what it's doing to this community. That's where the rubber is going to meet the road. That's why being able to look at all these narratives for what they are and take a step back away from without getting emotionally charged is going to be the most important thing that all of us do. Because look, when the violence kicks up and somebody you know is hurt or worse, killed, trust me, I guarantee you, you will see something new in yourself and the people around you. You know, we used to drive through neighborhoods, and some days we get shot at, some days we get shot at. Somebody gets wounded, and nobody ever sees anything. Nobody knows where the bullets came from. And you do that enough, and pretty soon you just want to bomb the whole neighborhood. You don't care anymore about who saw what or who didn't. You don't care anymore about diplomacy or politics or engagement. You just care about, I want some payback. And that's what they want to drive you towards. They want to drive you to the place where you see a certain group, a certain religion, or a certain race as the problem. And the truth of the matter is, human nature is when you bring in groups like that and you put them in small enclaves, they are going to stay in small enclaves and they're going to stay aligned with their own culture. The one thing they're most afraid of is that all of these little cultures band together and turn against them. That's what they don't want. That's the challenge we have, is how do we unite all these disparate groups of people, bring them together and have them fight, not just for the sovereignty of the nation, but this is the sovereignty of the planet. This is incredibly complex, the operations that they're conducting against us, incredibly complex. And they've had years and years to plan. And all the oligarchs are part of it, every single one of them. How else do you explain that Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos are in insurance, they're in pharmaceutical, and Gates is in food production? That would never be allowed to happen if our institutions were functioning properly. But that's where we are. And I'm not planning for things between now and November to be peaceful. I'm planning for them to be non-peaceful and violent. And I would hope to be wrong. In fact, I do hope I'm wrong, but I'm not planning on it. I'm planning for the worst and you should too. But you should look at all of these narratives that are coming out as planned events, as planned narratives to try and generate an emotional response. That's exactly why they're being pushed right now. And they'll get a response out of a certain portion of the population. We just need to organize. We need to get prepared for what's coming. We need to be using our exercising our equipment, exercising in groups, and getting ready for the violence that's to come. Because we're going to see it play out in Europe first. There's your heads up. And if France continues the way I think France is going to continue, it's going to be very violent in a very short period of time. So keep that in mind over the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to continue to see things get more ambiguous and amp up. And we're watching the slow, controlled death of our nation. And what comes out of this will be up to us, nobody else. So keep that in mind. And if, by God, if you look at these narratives, look at them for what they are. They're all BS, all of them. I'll be back Wednesday with the roundtable. I think we finally got a good schedule. We'll see. The video that Matt was talking about is posted in the comments section of the roundtable from last week. I suggest you all watch it. It's 3 hours long, but it's a good watch, and it's worth watching this. Because this bears repeating. War is a marathon. We are not in a sprint. We are in a marathon. It means we have to control our pace. We have to control our responses. We have to control all of our emotions as we go through this. And this is an information war. We're not going to be able to go just kick doors and win the fight. It's not going to work that way. We're going to have to counter all of their narratives. We're going to have to counter all of their themes and messages. We're going to have to call out the hypocrisy as we see it, and as loud as we possibly can. And that's some of that's covered in the video, which is why I gave Matt so much airtime on last week's show, because he was the only one of us that was able to get through it before the show. And trust me when I say this, I get inundated with information every single day. Like today, my phone rang off the hook. I couldn't answer all the calls. And most of the time, I have to call people back because I have so much information coming at me. The key thing is focus on the signal. Don't focus on the noise. And you'll know if it's noise if you start getting emotionally amped up. That's your barometer. That's your early warning sign. If you start getting emotionally charged, then you know that that's a message that they want you to bite into. Don't bite. Go do something else, ground yourself, come back, look at it when you're objective. I guarantee you that will help you break up all of the noise that's coming at you, because there's going to be a shitload more. They're going to flood the airways. And the thing they haven't done yet, which they're going to do, is take platforms off. So if Rumble goes down, I'll be on Telegram. If Telegram goes down, I'll be on Gab. If Gab goes down, then I'll probably be using two cans and a string. But we will continue to communicate as long as we possibly can. And if we have to switch to a HF radio, we'll do that. The point is, we have to keep the lines of communication flowing, especially in our own communities. Don't take anything for granted. Don't assume anything is real. Don't assume anyone is telling the truth, even me. You can question me all you want. I get it all the time. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's like, really? Point is, keep your eyes and ears open. I'll be back Wednesday and Friday this week. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.